afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And there's lots of those. Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017. Wendy Wilson will be joining us in just a few short moments. We will do the market report first. And I guess everyone is there for celebration. Dow 22,000. Yay! I want to hear it, everybody. Get up, jump up and down, scream up and down. But that was the... And it's interesting how... we'll talk about it later after the first segment of the program. So let's go ahead and get to the market report. We have a little pressure on gold, $1.90, nothing major, $1,267. Silver was down 13 cents at $16.65. Platinum was up 2 at $950, and palladium was holding at $894. Little pressure on the dollar, USDX 92.89, down 0.15. And oil was up a few cents, 0.36 at 49.52. And it looks like the Dow up 51 points, 22,015. The NASDAQ was still in the red, just a quarter point at 63.62. And the S&P is up 1 at 24.77. 10-year yield, 2.26%, up just 0.01. And, of course, the euro, that's still climbing, 1.19, up 0.33. What's interesting here, you have the Dow hitting an all-time high. You'd think confidence would be going through the roof. And yet that little fear and greed index that I reference periodically shows that it dropped in the greed section from, the middle 70s down to 67. So it's interesting to see that type of a move in that type of
indicator
that showing that the emotion of greed has actually dropped when the Dow is hitting 22,000, a record high. So just interesting. And what's also interesting is Wendy Wilson, all the information that she brings us each and every Wednesday at this time, and I'd like to welcome Wendy. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about the vaccine farms. Ever hear that term?
Nope.
Oh, well, in the 1800s, the New England Vaccine Company was actually manufacturing these comparatively unknown vaccines known as non-human bovine lymph tissue vaccines. And they were looking for a way to quickly grow their business, so they came up with this business model. It entailed a physician reward points for purchasing their products. They were called ivory points. Also, they secured the patronage of the boards of health in the largest cities of the United States and Canada. And they also convinced the U.S. War Department to inject their product into all enlisted men. So this
Wait
was
a
the
second. I thought you said it were for non-human.
Yeah.
But they're going to enlist it into, well, they're army men. They don't count them as human, I guess. But
No. And well, this was the beginning of the herd immunity concept, see. And so this is how the vaccine industry grew to $24 billion industry, but it keeps growing globally. So up until the early 1900s, the vaccine manufacturers were actually called vaccine farms because they cultured their disease from farm animals like cows. And horses were also used, so the vaccine companies were often in close proximity to farms and stables unless they owned their own. And according to documents from the New England Vaccine Company, a lot of competitors like the New York Dispensary seemed to pop up overnight with no prior experience in the business. So I came across this really interesting 1882 ad in the Medical Gazette for vaccine viruses by the New England Vaccine Company. The ivory points they gave doctors equaled about a dollar for their order, and also all their lymph tissue vaccines were $3 for, I guess, an order a case. And they said liberal discounts on large orders. And also, they would duplicate or furnish a replacement for vaccine failures. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, for what it's worth, you've heard me talk about being sued by the Attorney General of Texas for I was a participant in a trust that leased some computers and chairs to a corporation that manufactured colloidal silver. And what we discovered in the course of being sued for $25,000 a day, we found out that the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act was the first one, so far as we've been able to discover, that equated people to animals. And the reason I mention that is you're telling us about these farms.
Yeah.
These vaccine farms in 1919, that's, I don't know, 13 years after they declared people to be animals. And I'm just wondering, people farms?
Well, no, these vaccine farms were in the 1800s, 1882 to the early 1900s.
Oh, okay.
And then since you mentioned 1906, by 1905, the U.S. Supreme Court decided the states had authority to mandate vaccination, especially in order to attend public school. The case was Jacobson versus Massachusetts. So today we have 46 states that do offer some type of vaccine exemption, but there are four states that do not, which are Mississippi, Minnesota, West Virginia, and California. So in the early 1900s, Americans kind of were resisting the vaccines, and the resistance is still extended somewhat to today because people have, you know, whatever their concern is, sometimes it's ethical, political, medical, or religious in nature, but people are still leery of vaccines. So the safety of vaccines has always been a concern to people from their conception to now. So we find now the CDC is searching to actually streamline the complexity of this vaccine infrastructure they now have. And according to they claim that the U.S. has 11,000 children born every day that require, according to them, 20 doses of 11 different diseases in vaccines by the time they're 18 months old.
And how did they determine that?
Yeah, that's a good question. They just decided, you know, it's 11 different diseases, but they're expanding on the diseases, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
CDC anticipates licensing new vaccines to the vaccine schedule that aren't contagious types of vaccines. So they're working on licensing vaccines for cancer, for gastric ulcers, for heart disease, for various respiratory diseases, as well as neurological disorders like dementia, malaria, and HIV. Now, the CDC also recognizes that it's easier, you know, to have people volunteer to be vaccinated, you know, by compelling them through legislative laws, basically. But they intend to extend this vaccine program. And this is a quote from the CDC Department of Health and Human Services meeting of April 2nd, 1999. And they said this: the vaccine delivery system must be extended to new populations of adolescents and adults. Many of the new vaccines will be targeted these age groups and must routinely include these groups to prevent disease. So it's all the message of, instead of managing disease, we're now moving to this grand big message of vaccines will, you know, control disease, prevent control disease. So gone is the management word, and it's prevent and control disease.
Well, what if we don't get these vaccines? Do we all die?
Well, see, the herd immunity concept is they're you know, through propaganda and brainwashing, they're getting the masses to believe that you have to be vaccinated, and if everybody's not vaccinated, it puts us at risk, and so the vaccinated will pressure the unvaccinated, or we're all going to die, kind of thing.
I mean, why do the vaccinated care? If the vaccines work, they should protect you from any disease carried by the unvaccinated.
See, that's a rational question, Al. And
a lot of this has
nothing to do with rational stuff. Now, here's something that'll just frost you. The CDC often reports that, you know, developing countries, hotbed of contagious diseases. So they're often going there with their WHO, CDC, UNICEF programs, the Rotary International to eradicate disease by lining up all these people and vaccinating them. So these organizations have really accelerated the vaccine programs over in these countries, and they use these areas to experiment on vaccines. According to Dr. Michael Carome, he says the CDC and the WHO tested the rotavirus. This is the rototech virus that they give infants for diarrhea. He says the sad outcome was that 450,000 children died testing this vaccine. And this was over in Africa. And
sad?
Yeah.
That's genocide.
No kidding.
That's not sad. That's genocide.
Well, here he goes on to explain physicians in Kenya had questions about the tetanus vaccine. And so one doctor was so suspicious that he and some other doctors had the vaccine tested because UNICEF and the WHO were only vaccinating females with it. So they wanted to know what's up with that. So this is Dr. Hugham Nagur, Mercy Medical Center in Nairobi, and he says, quote, "We sent six samples of the tetanus from different parts of Kenya to laboratories in South Africa, and they tested positive for HCG antigen." Now, that stands for anti-human chorionic gonadotropin. It's a hormone that is a sterilization drug.
And what you're what I may be hearing, mm-hmm, is that they were giving these vaccines or these vaccinations were actually making people sterile.
Women. And it's very specific. According to Dr. Nagur, he says this proved correctly our worst fears that the WHO campaign is not about eradicating disease, but it's using that as a smokescreen to conduct a well-coordinated and forceful population control through mass sterilization using a fertility-regulating vaccine. We provided this proof to the Ministry of Health before a third round of immunizations were conducted, but we were ignored. So that tells me Ministry of Health's been paid off.
Is that Ministry of Health within the Kenya, if we're talking about Kenya?
Yeah, he goes on to say that the tetanus vaccine was used in Mexico, Nigeria in 1993, and the Philippines in 1994, as well as in Nairobi. So they've been testing it in areas where they don't want, you know, more people to populate. What Dr. Nagur said to LifeSite News is that, you know, when you give a normal tetanus shot, it requires sometimes a booster 10 years later. He says typically children are given three tetanus booster shots within a three-year period by the time the child is about 5 years old or going to school. Now, of course, if you get a wound and you're worried about it, they may give you a booster, he says. But the WHO was administering five shots over a 24-month period and only to females who were pregnant or of childbearing age or at least 15 years old. He said this practice is not seen in regular medicine or any government policy for tetanus shots. He went on to say that this HCG mimics hormone production by pregnancy and it creates an antibody that comes against it. So what happens is the female's immune system creates a condition where if she becomes pregnant, she will miscarry. And he says the clinical results are that within 3 years of getting this tetanus shot, and if women become pregnant, they will miscarry.
And you say within 3 years, but
within
beyond
3 years,
that, they go back to normal?
Well, no. He says women may get a shot now, and they may get pregnant and carry full term, but if for some reason it takes 3 years for this hormone to generate such a resistance to pregnancy. It's interesting. He says usually that 3 year window is when women start not having the babies.
Well, the whole thing is just astonishing.
Well, and here is a quote. LifeSite News actually obtained a UN report from 1992 in August from their world headquarters in Geneva where they discussed the use of the fertility-regulating vaccine, describing it as the HCG vaccine as the most advanced. So this is, you know, planned.
Just incredible. I mean, just mind-boggling. This is the sort of thing you would expect to hear from Nazi Germany.
Right. Well, so far they've inoculated 1 million Kenyan women. There's a 1.3 million yet to go. So basically they're telling women, even if you're pregnant and you haven't gotten a tetanus shot, you need to protect the baby from tetanus and vaccinate now while you're pregnant. And I'm like, you know, how is a baby going to get cut in the wound and get tetanus?
You know what I'm curious about is they are giving you, you mentioned that they are giving you a multitude of vaccines here in the United States to allegedly protect us from something like 11 different diseases or 20, I don't recall, 20 shots to protect us against 11 diseases. Yeah. How many people died from these diseases every year before we had these vaccines?
Not many. Actually, those diseases were on the decline because we had better hygiene, we had better sewer systems, we had refrigeration, and we could get, you know, vegetables year-round. So before vaccines were ever invented, all those childhood diseases were on the decline. But, you know, shots required, vaccines were first, as you know, required for young kids to go to public school, and they've expanded on that. Then it was for the military, and then for international travel, if you're going, then also, you know, certain vaccines, if you were, you know, traveling with pets or had your pets boarded. So now we're seeing, you know, you're needing certain vaccines for employment in some occupations. Also, now they're requiring it over in Europe. Preschool and daycare has to have, you have to have inoculation records. Boarding, traveling with your pets, I mentioned, attending middle school, high school, and college, what they're doing now in the United States, only for the females, giving them a tetanus shot. Or you can't graduate. That's what they're doing. Also, prison inmates get a lot of vaccines, and God knows what they're getting. So, the immunization environment, they said, according to WHO, and they said by 2030, the immunization environment is going to look different than it does today. So
yeah, it'll be depopulated. There'll be nobody here but the robots.
Well, they said, according to their plans, vaccines will become more involved in non-contagious diseases, like I mentioned. So anything that burdens health or the environment is a threat will come under vaccine control, it seems. So disease elimination programs, according to the WHO, will continue to exist, but as a stronger health system with regular contact with communities globally. So the immunization campaign, they say, will be managed on a single platform. That's kind of a big database.
The whole thing is scary. It's frightening. It's the sort of thing, I mean, you hear a lot of conspiracy theories, and you kind of wonder, I don't know, is this real or is it not? What you're telling us right now certainly sounds credible, astonishing, mind-boggling, hard to believe, and scary besides all that. Give us a little contact information, Wendy.
Yeah, and keep that in mind. You're going to be vaccinated if there's an emergency of any kind, terrorist or biological, anything. So keep that in mind. We'll cover that next time. They can give us a call at Apothecary Herbs. The number is 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. ThePowerHerbs.com is the web address. And we have a 15% off special going on through the 9th. So ask about that.
All right, Wendy, thanks very much. That's Wendy Wilson from ThePowerHerbs.com at 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as common sense voices of integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Adusk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on in the program's Financial Survival Course, and it's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I have a batch of 1 ounce silver rounds. They are the Buffaloes. They're 2017s. 10 cents over spot. We only have 400 of them at that price. 10 cents over spot. So whatever spot is, pardon?
Can't beat it.
10 cents. So 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. 10 cents over spot. And they're beautiful coins. 1 ounce silver rounds, the Buffalo 2017s. We've got 400 of them at that price. We're also going to continue with the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece. It's a steal at $675. Two of them equal a 1 ounce coin, and the price is lower. And anytime they dip below the $20 Liberty gold piece, it's time to buy them. So now's the time to purchase these. $675. If you purchase 10 of them, I'll drop the price to $670, so you can save yourself a little money there. 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com. Yes, the Dow hit 22,000, and I'm not sure with all the announcements coming out of the White House if it was all released to make sure that it pushed up over 22,000, but I'm sure it helped. But I think what the biggest news was that Trump unveils the overhaul on legal immigration. Now, this was just released about midday, and really haven't had much opportunity to go through it detail by detail. But Mr. Trump teamed up with two Republican senators, Senator Tom Cotton and David Perdue out of Georgia, and they've been working on this since, you know, the beginning of the year. I believe it was March, and they hope that the legislation would move the United States to a merit-based immigration system and away from the current model, which is largely based on family ties. And this is something that Mr. Trump has campaigned on. He says he wants to protect the U.S. workers and taxpayers, and that's why he was there today, adding the measure would reduce poverty, increase wages, save taxpayers billions and billions of dollars. The legislation would eliminate immigration preferences currently given to extended family members and adult children of U.S. citizens seeking green cards, and it would cap the number of accepted refugees at 50,000. It would also end the State Department's diversity visa lottery, which the senators say is plagued with fraud. The program had been allotted 50,000 visas for the 2018 fiscal year, and you got about 1 million immigrants who receive green cards per year. The act, it's called RAISE Act, helps realize Mr. Trump's vision of making America great again. It still has to go to the Senate and get voted on and so forth. Cotton and Perdue, the senators, hope they can get the leadership to bring the legislation up for votes. They still have to cobble together about 60 senators, but, you know, there's a lot of other senators who've been working on similar bills this year.
Just bait the trap with dollars, Melody. If you're hunting celibate senators.
I get it. I was just trying to remain.
Room full of dollar bills. They'll be there.
What
they have a nose
understand.
For these kinds. They can smell dollar bills.
What I want to take a little bit of closer look at this is they want to bring in more skilled laborers.
Well, they'd better because the way the robots are gone, the unskilled aren't going to be able to get jobs.
Well, that's my point to some degree. But you bring in skilled laborers. What happens to the skilled laborers that are already here in the U.S.? We just don't have enough? And why don't we have enough? And if you bring in more skilled, if you bring in more skilled laborers, that means you have a bigger pool, which means how does that increase wages?
Well, I guess the main idea behind this, I'm not sure that they're planning to bring more skilled laborers in. If they set this up and say, we're not letting you in unless you have a skill, it may actually restrict the flow of immigrants into this country. It may be a pretext to say, well, sorry, can't let you in because you don't have a skill that where you can support yourself. But I'm not against that.
I'm not either.
Right? There's no point to bringing people in here where all they can do is collect welfare. Right? Just, well, we're going to sign up for welfare and let me get my mom and my dad and cousins and everybody else up there.
Absolutely.
We'll all be on welfare. You got to be, if you're coming here, you have to have something to offer. You want something us to offer something to you, you have to offer something to us, and you'd better have a skill.
And I agree with that 100%. So though that's just the area that, you know, it wasn't really clear as far as how that would be. But I agree with you. I think this is something that needs to be done. There is so much fraud. And you have so many of these cities, and just like I've explained on this program before, where I live, close to the beaches, you have all these summer jobs. They bring teenagers from countries all over the world to work on the shops on the boardwalk. It's like, well, what's wrong with American kids? Why aren't they at the boardwalk? Well, they don't pay enough. And the city subsidizes people to bring them in for the housing and everything else. It's like, stop it.
Yeah, I know.
Stop it.
Why not just subsidize, instead of subsidizing housing and the rest of that, why not just pay a couple extra bucks on whatever you're paying the teenagers?
Yeah, but the
point, if the going rate is too low to get them to work, pay them a couple more dollars as a subsidy and let them work here in this country.
I agree, but the whole point is get government out of business. They shouldn't be subsidizing anyone, anytime.
Well, I agree.
You know, I was reading about this stuff this morning, and it's like, the government is not here to help the American people.
Yeah.
That's not their job to help. And that's all you hear time and time. We're here to help the American people, the American people. You're not here to help the American people. But they have done such a job in destroying this country
that we really need help.
We really need help.
Yeah. But you gotta go, will you please help us? I know you've ruined things for us, but do you suppose you could help us now for a change? It is, and as people become more impoverished and they find themselves living in a time that is increasingly austere, where are you going to go for help? Once you get into this kind of trouble, it feeds on itself.
You used to be family.
Well, I get that, but
your church was there. Your local charities used to be there.
I agree. And it used to be built into everybody's mind that you needed a job.
You helped people.
Right now, you need a congressman. Huh? And you can get welfare or whatever it is you think you're entitled to. And it won't work out well. It's going to be a disaster before this is done, but they can't stop it. Because to sit back and say, look, we're going to start cutting welfare, you know what's going to happen. You're going to see riots and violence if we cut welfare. What if we cut welfare for the poor?
Problem.
What about subsidies for the poor or for the rich? And the rich are getting subsidies. What about them? Stop subsidizing them. They're going to stop bribing Congress. That's not going to happen. So we're going to ride this horse until the horse essentially dies. And the whole thing collapses, and in the aftermath, in the ruins, then we will perhaps be able to build something reasonable, rational up again and have it for a while. We'll see how it goes. But I cannot imagine that the politicians are going to correct this problem in any way that would cross my mind as being rational.
They can't.
They're going to deal with this because this is politics. They can't cut people's, entitlements.
But if they had decided to work on these problems 20 years ago, do you realize how far better off we'd be today?
Well,
sure,
yeah.
We'd still have a lot of these problems. But if they just
they might attacked still be something we could
but the
deal
problem,
with.
It has. They have to begin by changing our monetary policy. And it doesn't have to be 100% gold-backed currency. Hey, just bring in a little, just kind of guide us in that direction so we can sort of get back to it. And the money and the power is just too strong, the corruption, and, people need to start being held accountable. I mean, there's so many things that they can do.
And they're not about to.
But they're not about to because you'd find each and every one of them in prison.
Yep.
So, they can't and they don't want to do it. Maybe it's not even a matter they can't. They don't want to.
I've got an article from Bloomberg that touches on this concept, on the idea we're talking about. And the headline is, States Turn to Financial Engineering to Ease Pension Burdens. Now, what do you suppose they mean by financial engineering, Melody?
Tell us, Al.
It's a fancy word for cooking the books and fraud. Right? It says it's no secret that states and cities across the country are grappling with a growing pension crisis. Now some are resorting to an unconventional tool to help. Financial engineering. It's an unconventional tool. It's kind of like bank robbery. You understand that you don't have enough money? Well, bank robbery is an unconventional tool. The government is, the state governments, the city governments, they're turning to unconventional tools. California, New Jersey, and other governments are moving resources around on their balance sheet. Okay? Now, I got some walnut shells here, Melody. Now, tell me which one the P is under. All right? As I'm going to shuffle these things around here. Now, which one's got the P? They're moving resources around on their balance sheets to lessen the burden of their underfunded pensions as more traditional reforms, and by traditional we mean legal and even rational, as more traditional reforms have failed to fix ailing systems. All right? And strategies have included everything from transferring lottery money public pensions to recognizing future revenues to lower current funding ratios. And I think it's not clear what they mean by recognizing future revenues to lower current funding ratios, but I think what it means is on the books they're going to say, well, I think I'm going to make a couple hundred thousand dollars in 20 years, and so we can count that now on the books as some kind of revenue, as if the money is already in the bank. Where states are starting to think strategically about what they have in internal assets and internal cash flow that they can redirect to get pensions on a steadier footing. Now, what's really interesting about this, let me get down here and find the key. Here's the thing. For California's political difficulties of passing traditional reforms have led officials to seek alternatives. For example, California will borrow $6 billion from internal surplus state cash balances to infuse into the California Public Employees Retirement System. Now, what's the consequence, Melody? If the state is going to borrow $6 billion from its own wallet, essentially, to fund the Public Employees Retirement System, who is going to pay that $6 billion back? And the answer is the taxpayers. Yeah. It's not the people who are getting the benefits. They're not going to have to pay it. It's going to be the taxpayers. And this is, they say, this is a very unique idea. It's different than a pension obligation bond or an over-contributing because they had a really good year. They are looking internally at their own balance sheets to see what are available in there, and they've set up a mechanism to repay it with tax revenues. What I'm getting to is what it sounds like to me is California said, well, we can't just take the money from the taxpayers and put it in the retirement funds. All right? Can't do that directly. That would be wrong. But if we borrow the money from state revenues and we put that in the tax fund, in the tax fund, we can leave the debt in our wallet. We can leave that to the taxpayers. I think what they're describing here is just a fancy way of screwing the taxpayers. They add an extra. You can't take the money directly from the taxpayers and put it in the pension fund. But if they take it from the state's excess cash, borrow it from there, we can leave it to the taxpayers to repay the debt.
So what else is new? You know.
Yeah, you look at it, but this is financial engineering. Woohoo! Chugga chugga. I mean, prepared to be railroaded by the financial engineers.
They upgraded President Bush's comment when he said fuzzy math.
Fuzzy math.
And, you know, the taxpayers just keep on, and they know it. They know how far they can push the taxpayers. Well, you don't think that they don't know how, you know, remember when you were a child and you just knew how far you could push your parents before you got in trouble? This is the same thing. They know how far they could push the taxpayer before the taxpayer either falls over and goes into bankruptcy court or, you know, begins to say, well, gee, maybe we shouldn't vote you in again. And then all of a sudden they'll say, well, we'll give you a little bit of a tax break. And then they just slam it to somebody else.
Yeah, the world is an interesting place, and it's shameless. You know, some of these things that we see take place, they're just blatant, and they're right in your face. I wouldn't be surprised if people were manipulating markets for most of my lifetime. On one level, I wouldn't be surprised.
Sure,
it would be like manipulating horse races. All right?
Go back and
look at it. It's been going on for a long time. It's not likely to end anytime soon, but they have become just blatant about it. Right? It's like having a horse that wears a sign that says, I'm on drugs, right? During the horse race. They're flying a flag. Says, this horse is on amphetamine or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just...
stock market at one time was just for the wealthy people. And they used to, you know, do all sorts of tricks and so forth just to, you know, it was a game. And then they figured out, huh?
Bring in the great unwashed.
Bring in the great unwashed. Yeah, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've seen what happens, and it's been rigged from day one. It's just it affected different people, and certainly the volume is.
It's just, and what's upsetting sometimes is that we don't seem to get angry about it,
and nobody. It seems like nobody cares.
I know everyone is apathetic. I don't know that everyone is apathetic, but somehow we don't seem to stand up on our hind legs and say, "Look, this has got to stop." We're not asking you; we're telling you it has to stop. And politicians, I don't know. There's a disconnect here that is offensive, irritating, confusing, bewildering.
Yeah, if somebody wants to do something with this country, let's see government break its tie to Wall Street. Let's see government break its tie to corporations with corporate welfare. Let's see government.
You mean that Congress would have to break its tie to people, pay them bribes, and that's not going to happen. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back to discuss the state of the state, folks. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis, with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to remind the listeners we have 400 1 ounce silver buffalo rounds at 10 cents. Did you hear that, folks? 10 cents. 10 pennies. 10 pennies over spot price. There is a limited amount. So you must call us fairly quickly, 1-800-375-4188. And we're also carrying the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece, $675. And if you purchase 10 or more, and lots of folks are purchasing lots of 10, we'll save you $5 on each coin. So again, 800-375-4188. And I know everyone is, you know, people see this Dow at 22,000, and you know, we keep, it doesn't mean anything. It's not supported by anything. And I do believe this immigration overhaul is a good thing. We'll have to see how it plays out. But what it also tells me is he can't do his tax cuts until he needs to get some money, because it has to be paid for somehow, some way. And I think I read that this overhaul and this legal immigration will save them to the tune of, I think, $300 billion on benefits and so forth. I don't know, over a period of time. I don't think that's a year, but perhaps over a period of time. So I do believe he's trying to do something to release some revenue, some funds. So
well, I don't
he
know
can
if it's
proceed.
Just releasing funds. Well, yeah, I get
so
I
he can proceed.
Saying.
Because he can't do any tax cuts. That's what he was betting on with Obamacare. You know, they needed those subsidies from Obamacare. Now, he can still go in there and defund those subsidies, but that's where that money that's going to come free from is going to go to the tax cuts.
You know, all of which tells us what?
We're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah, that's right. The government's broke.
We're broke.
Yeah. Right, we're going to be going through the couch, the creases in the couch, looking for change here in a little while, and the government's broke. That's what he's really signaling here, and they're trying to cut costs any way they can. We have the debt limit is coming up in September. Right, we're going to face that at the end of September again. If the government, depending on what government does, they may. I'm going to assume they're going to respond to it. They're going to increase the debt limit, but there are some people that say no, they're not going to support that. We'll watch and see. This will be another interesting drama.
I know, and that's what everybody loves. Everybody loves a drama, and you know, Mnuchin wants a clean increase, which means there's no legislation attached to it. That ain't gonna happen. They don't pass anything clean. You know,
that's what the Democrats want. The Democrats want, they won't agree to any deal unless there's no limits on how much money they can spend and how many people they can bring in. They want, well, just, we won't go along. The Democrats are essentially saying they won't support an increase in the tax ceiling. They won't support it unless
things are
the government is allowed to spend everything it can find, every dime it can find, and And the Republicans are saying, no, we've got to stop this spending.
And what's interesting,
at least some Republicans are saying that.
What's interesting, I don't know if it will have any impact on it or not, but initially the debt ceiling was supposed to, you know, we were okay because they've done some special, you know, financing and so forth through October. So they bumped it up to September. I even heard dates as early as the end of August. And what's interesting, and the reason is the revenue is becoming shorter because people who are getting incomes that pay taxes are holding. They have found ways to hold their taxes because they're expecting Trump to get this tax cut through.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, it's restricted the flow of tax revenue
exactly. into the government while people are waiting to get a better deal.
They're waiting for a better deal.
No, I'm going to wait for a better deal.
If that's something that could explode in the background of things. So we'll see, but I found that interesting. I found it irritating. You know, again, it's people with, you know, the big bucks that are able to, you know, they don't get, you know, they just hold off to get the better deal.
You know, I wonder, you know, well, that's one explanation. You know, and I don't doubt there's, but the question is, to what extent is that true? Is that really what's going on, or is that just a seemingly credible explanation for their having a shortage in tax revenue? No, you
well,
could say
the
they're
other,
having a shortage in tax revenue because the economy's cooling off.
Usually, and that's exactly what I was going to say, it has happened before, but it's usually when the country is in a recession. And this is one of the few times that they've seen it to where they're naming a different cause for it. So,
who says we're not in a recession?
Pick your weapon. So,
I mean, the reality is that we've said it on this program for a number of times over the past several years. Government says, "Oh, recovery, recovery, recovery." I'm not sure that we've had a recovery. We haven't had an outright collapse. I give you that. But it's not clear to me that we've had a real recovery. We are arguably, you know, I know that there's economists, they would argue, they would say I'm mistaken about this, but I'm not mistaken by a lot. If I'm wrong, but it's not a big mistake. I've been in a recession since the onset of the Great Recession. They say it ended several years ago. I don't think it did. I think we're still in the, you know,
when they started tinkering with the economy, with adjusting interest rates in order to prevent any booms and busts, we didn't come out of any recession. They were all covered up by debt, and the recessions got deeper and deeper, and debt grew. And so they cover up these recessions with debt. They create new programs, and so it just goes on and on and on. Did we ever truly come out of any of the recessions since 87? Most
and I think the answer
not.
Is I think the no. answer is no, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
And if we're going to have a recovery, what does it mean? What does a recovery mean? Right? Does it merely mean that we have more money? Or does it mean that if we have a real recovery, we have gone back to work, and we're making enough money to support ourselves and to support the economy and hold things together? They say we're having a recovery. I think we're just having a stimulus program. I think the recovery would be if everybody had jobs and everybody was making a good living and we could afford a new home. And when I say, okay, we got a recovery. But when we've got essentially the financial equivalent of soup lines for people and say, here's money for you, and here's money for you, and here's money for some other guy. Do we have a recovery, or do we just have the government passing out money in order to create the illusion of a recovery? And I think that's all we've had, is perhaps the illusion of a recovery, because it's all supported with debt that will never repay. Never going to be repaid. I mean, this whole thing is, you know, stimulus, but it creates an illusion. It's not like it gets you up and makes you go to work. Maybe that's what they were hoping would happen, but it doesn't seem to have happened, not to the extent that you need for a recovery. Right? Stimulus, yeah. Recovery, no, I don't think so.
The auto industry, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they came out for July, and they're terrible. They've all dropped. You know, we talked yesterday about consumer spending. That lost momentum. So, you know, going into, you know, supposedly following a quarter of 2.6 GDP going into the third quarter, you wouldn't be seeing these numbers. They'd still be strong. Stronger, not strong, but stronger than what they're saying. So again, it's the numbers just do not support the
optimism,
the illusion that they have created, and the optimism that it's. And we see it in my little report when you look at the indicator of fear and greed. The Dow's hitting 22,000. Yet that dropped. Went, you know, it was 72 greed. Now it's 60 something greed. So.
I've got an article from investors.
But hey, Al, who cares? Don't buy gold. Don't buy silver. Just wait for those paper investments to turn around and drop, and then we'll hear a bunch of people crying and saying, gee, I wish I would have listened. Go ahead.
Yeah. An article from Investors Business Daily that's along the line we're talking about here. And the headline is the stock market crazy? No, just following surging profits, as always. Right, and they say for months now, many investors and Wall Street analysts have wondered how the major stock market indexes can keep climbing higher into record territory when the economy is growing at a slow 2% pace. But it's really no mystery. Profits, the fuel for rising stock prices, are growing. In recent months, despite the ongoing political chaos and drama of the Trump White House, the new president has started the U.S. down a path toward potentially substantial economic growth. Right? Now, this is their argument. They're saying that the market is picking up on the fact that Trump has moved us in a direction toward potentially substantial economic growth, and that is the explanation for the new record highs. People are saying, oh, you just wait another quarter, another two quarters, whatever, and we're going to start making money hand over fist. They're saying, and the article goes on, it says, okay, but maybe, just maybe, the rising corporate profits in the stock market are telling us more about the future than the slow GDP data are telling us. They're saying that rising corporate profits, that's what's making the stock market go up, and they may be right about that, but are the profits going up because people are selling at a higher price and having lower costs? Or is it going up because people are essentially cooking the books, salting the mine by low interest rates, allowing corporations to go out and buy their own stocks and perhaps that way generate an apparent corporate profit that's more of an illusion than anything else? They go on, they say GDP as an indicator actually lags changes in the real economy. It's a rear-view mirror gauge. So what's actually happening now in the economy, though not fully recognized, will often be felt in later quarters or years. They're arguing that the current economy might be much stronger than the GDP suggests. They're saying the GDP can't be relied on. The strength, this possible strength in the real economy would only become apparent in future quarters and years. But likewise, if the GDP can't be accounted, it can't be relied on, the current economy might also be much weaker than the current GDP suggests. If so, despite the good times that politicians trumpet, we might already be sliding toward another recession or even a depression. All of which tells us what? It tells us that the GDP, the gross domestic product, does not have much of a value as a future indicator. It could mean, it could signal we're going up, it could signal we're going down. They're saying it's just a number that we watch right now, but it's not telling you which way we're really going. It provides evidence of what has happened in the economy, but does not reliably point toward whatever will happen in the future.
Agreed, and that's why they do the three revisions after the initial, and that's why you always get, you know, the first quarter for this year was revised downward to 1.2, so
which helps to make the next quarter seem more up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if we don't revise the first quarter down, then the second quarter is not going to seem so high. If we know, if we could revise the first quarter down to zero, okay, then we can tell the second quarter we made 3%. Yay!
But you can think that perhaps at one given time, these reports and stats mattered.
Yeah, they did.
But just like charts, when you've got rigged economies, when you get rigged markets, when you get, you know, when these stats haven't changed with the way everything else has changed, how can you rely on them?
I know you can't.
You can't.
Huh? The whole thing is just become irrational, wishful thinking, and illusion.
And what we do, and that's why so many of these stats don't respond to one another. They conflict one another. And that's how I come to the conclusions of where we're at, and that things are not in the illusion that they've created. The numbers don't, one and one still equals two. I think, Al, right?
It depends on your self-esteem, Melody.
Oh, is that it?
With the new math, it might be three. If you felt better about yourself, it could be three.
You know, it's again the illusion that they've created.
It's not just the illusion that they created. Why do they need an illusion? Right? It's not just, they're not just spinning illusions because they want to be David Copperfield. They're spinning illusions because the reality cannot be tolerated at this time. The truth cannot be faced, cannot be witnessed. And insofar as if they are spinning illusions, if you agree with that premise, you have to agree that it's evidence that we are in deep, deep trouble. And they're using the illusion like a drug to conceal that trouble from us, at least for now. But it seems to me that trouble's coming.
Absolutely.
Also, we're out of time.
No, so I don't want to be.
Well, you are, and so am I. So we'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, and the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.